Welcome to room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
Well, it's good to be back in room 4216 with you, Cecilia.
I'm always glad to be back in room 4216 with you, Pastor Dave.
And with all our listeners. Mm-hmm. Today, I think we're going to be ending the book of Leviticus.
Really?
Looking in particular, yep. In chapter 25, really 25 to the end of the book, talks about different types of celebrations they're supposed to be doing. Sabbath, Jubilee, and all those sorts of things. So why don't we go ahead and go in and get started looking at these things?
Sure.
Leviticus chapter 25, beginning at verse 1.
The Lord said to Moses on Mount Sinai, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, when you enter the land I am going to give you, the land itself must observe a Sabbath to the Lord. For 6 years, sow your fields, and for 6 years, prune your vineyards and gather their crops. But in the seventh year, the land is to have a Sabbath of rest, a Sabbath to the Lord. Do not sow your fields or prune your vineyards. Do not reap what grows of itself or harvest the grapes of your untended vines. The land is to have a year of rest. Whatever the land yields during the Sabbath year will be food for you, for yourself, your manservant and maidservant, and the hired worker and temporary resident who lives among you, as well as for your livestock and the wild animals in your land. Whatever the land produces may be eaten."
Now, Cecilia, we haven't talked a whole lot about Sabbath.
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
This isn't exactly what I was picturing when it came to the Sabbath.
Well, I'll tell you what. There was a study put out by Concordia Publishing House called Lifelight.
Yeah, we had it in a past lesson.
Yeah, and it talks really well about what is a Sabbath. And it'll put the backdrop for it, not only for chapter 25, but everything. So let's go ahead and listen to that.
Most people probably don't think of the Sabbath as one of Israel's feasts. However, in Leviticus 23, God speaks to Moses, telling him to tell the children of Israel of the festivals. The Hebrew word used is moedim, which means appointed times. These are the times God has appointed to meet with his people, and the Sabbath is the first of the feasts mentioned. Interestingly, this is not the first mention of the Sabbath. The first mention of the Sabbath even comes long before Exodus 20, where God includes it among the Ten Commandments he spoke to Moses when he commanded that the Sabbath day be kept holy. Even by then, Moses and the people of Israel knew the significance of the seventh day of the week. Sabbath means rest, and of course we know that following God's creative work, which took place over the course of the first 6 days, he rested. He took a day off. It seems strange to think of our all-powerful, creative God needing a rest. And actually, the scriptures do not say that he needed a rest, simply that he rested. One can imagine God having finished filling the earth with all manner of marvelous things, simply wanting to lie back and marvel at his creation. Perhaps he contemplated all that he had done, or simply wanted to watch and enjoy the fruits of his labor. So God rested. He stopped working and set aside that day, making it a holy day, our first holiday. But the Sabbath is not mentioned again until the people of Israel are in the wilderness. This stubborn people had just been delivered from the taskmaster's whip in Egypt. traveling by God's grace with the plunder of Egypt in their possession. They had just witnessed miraculous deliverance from death under a chariot's wheel as God brought them across the sea, drowning Pharaoh's army. And yet they still did not trust God. Still controlled by their desires, they grumbled against God for water, and he gave them fresh water from bitter pools. And they grumbled against God for food, actually looking back and longing for their slavery, where they were whipped but at least fed. So God gave them food from the heavens, quail in the evening, and manna with the morning dew. Now would they trust him? Somehow, in the oral tradition of the people, the Sabbath was known about, expected, and probably longed for. For 430 years of slavery, they had had no day of rest or even a concept of taking a day to do nothing. So here, barely out of Egypt, the Sabbath is celebrated. And still, some tested God. They collected their share for 2 days on the sixth day, and still went out on the seventh to collect manna, but they found none. Clearly, God's people still needed to learn to trust him for their provision, and they needed to learn to rest. The Sabbath day is a day to remind us that God is our creator and provider. He gives us the food on our table, the air that we breathe, the clothes on our back, everything. This is what the Sabbath day is for, and we learn how to rest in the trust that God will continue to provide for our needs. Unfortunately, God's people don't often seem to trust well. As time went on, this wilderness people established themselves in their new land. They grew to be a mighty nation and ultimately forgot God's promises. They began to rely again on their own works. Trust in God was replaced with trust in themselves. God, who brought them out of bondage into freedom, would send them into bondage to find freedom again. So God's people were exiled from Jerusalem, away from the temple, into foreign lands, so that they might turn once again to him. If only they had understood. They made the Sabbath and other festivals into ordinances to follow in some vain attempt to please an angry God. This continued through Jesus' time and continues today.
Abigail, out for a morning walk?
Oh, hi, David. Yeah, and I thought I'd gather a
join
bit from
me.
The. Yeah, I thought I'd gather a bit from the manna area.
What?
You know,
we're supposed to gather double yesterday, the sixth day. Nothing today.
Well, yeah, but you know, maybe God's trying to trick us. Maybe he's really going to leave manna
God
out
doesn't
there.
Doesn't trick us. We have to trust God. He's the one who's brought us so far already.
Oh, yeah, but. You see, maybe people didn't gather enough yesterday. And so I'm starting this kind of black market thing. You know, I thought I'd, get a bit extra, you know.
Gail, they need to learn to trust God, too. Ah, and here we are at the gathering field. And what do you see?
There's nothing.
Right. God said gather on the sixth day double, and on the seventh day rest.
Pastor Dave, we live in an interesting time. We live in kind of a bit of two generations. Do you remember years ago what Sundays were like? I mean, I'm talking 30 years ago, maybe.
I remember coming to St. Louis and seeing, and that was back in 1982, so 40 years ago, and there were blue laws. I don't know why they're called blue, not green or whatever, but you couldn't buy anything on a Sunday. The stores were closed and the grocery stores were open, but the liquor aisle was roped off.
I didn't know it was roped off, but that's exactly what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
It was very different on Sundays than it is now.
Yeah. It was a day of rest, no activity, no work. And it sure is different now where everyone seems to be working on a Sunday and shopping on a Sunday. You can buy anything you want on a Sunday.
Including the liquor.
Yeah.
But also a bit more boring on Sundays. I mean,
boring?
Well, yeah. It's boring sitting and doing nothing. I mean, little kids going to church, for instance. I remember going to church, and we were supposed to sit in church quietly, unless we wanted to sing during the hymns, of course. But
Grandpa would say that's where you learn to sit and be quiet, and it's a good practice because I had to do it too.
Yes, well, I'll bet Grandpa thought it was just as boring.
Yeah, probably.
But
yeah, it can be work to do nothing. Hard work. Inside, we want to fidget and move. You know, when we talk about the Sabbath, it's not so much what it is, but why. Or
what?
Is it
not
why
what?
And not what?
What?
Sabbath means rest, and we are to take a day of rest. And yet, it doesn't mean total inactivity. A break from the regular is more what it's implying. And so we usually think of work. But for a person who doesn't work, like a lot of people with disabilities or blindness, a break from the regular would mean
doing a little bit of work.
And when I say go to church, really what God was looking for was take time for Him. Take time for Him. You know, back when you read in chapter 25 in the first segment, it talked about how the fields shouldn't be cultivated and then harvested, but the people could eat from whatever grew. And the word was reap. That means for commercial use. Work the ground hard to get as big a yield as you can so that you can then have a big crop to sell it commercially. And sure. God is saying, no, it needs to rest, just like us. Don't push it, push it, push it. And the same with us. As the Lifelight noted, God didn't need rest, but He took it. He relaxed. And that's partly what this is trying to get to. But the New Testament goes even one step further with that.
Oh,
how about in the next segment here, we listen to part two of the Lifelight study on the Sabbath.
And rabbis have taught that honoring the Sabbath is the way in which Jewish people will be redeemed. In fact, in many observant Jewish communities, it is taught that if any one community could keep the Sabbath perfectly just once, that Messiah would come. The Sabbath was so important to the Jews that when the Syrians attacked Jerusalem on the Sabbath during the intertestamental period, the people of that city let themselves be slaughtered rather than defend themselves on the Sabbath. And so, there is much discussion about how to keep the Sabbath. What is it to work, and what is it to rest? That is the question. In the Scriptures, very few things are defined as work on the Sabbath. In the Talmud, there are 39 categories of work that are prohibited on the Sabbath. Observant Jewish people work very hard at resting. The Sabbath became the day of worship for the Jewish people. As synagogue worship developed during the Babylonian captivity, the Sabbath grew in importance because of the people's inability to go to the temple. It developed as a day of prayer and study, and to this day, Jewish people who observe the Sabbath usually spend it engaged in discussions around the Torah and the Talmud. In Jesus' time, He and the apostles who followed Him used the Sabbath as an opportunity to teach the Jewish people about the Messiah, to show them that the Sabbath and other festivals of God's people were signposts that pointed to Jesus as the fulfillment of God's law. So Jesus said, "Come to Me, all you who are weary and are burdened, and I will give you rest." He became our Sabbath rest. And the burden of our observance was lifted by the faith that God grew in our hearts. But Sabbath observance continues to be a burden to many. To desecrate the Sabbath is to deny God's creative power and to trust ourselves for our own provision. To do this will certainly lead to the death we deserve because of our sin, for we are turning away from the One who would forgive us and who sacrificed his only son as our sin offering that we might have life. Curiously, though, many Christians have increased their burdens by insisting on Sabbath observance as a day of worship. They have thus have added restrictions to God's grace, misunderstanding the Sabbath and thinking that His grace is not freely given, but is dependent upon Sabbath observance. There are good reasons to worship God on the Sabbath, but we must be quick to teach that it is certainly not the only day God set aside for His people to worship. He wanted their daily worship and prescribed offerings to be made daily, weekly, and seasonally. The Sabbath was about more than just worship. It was about God's sovereignty over our lives. In Christ, we mark every day a Sabbath when we enter God's rest in Jesus. And so it is appropriate for our congregations to come together and worship on Sunday mornings, as the church has come to do in the observance of the day that Jesus was raised from the dead.
Wait, in the Old Testament, it talks about taking a rest. Mm-hmm. The Sabbath is our rest.
Mm-hmm.
Now in the New Testament, it says Jesus is our rest. How can that be?
It is a twist, and it's a twist for a big reason. Can you quote for me Ephesians 2, 8, and 9?
For it is by grace you have been saved, and this not of yourselves, lest any man should boast. Yeah. Something like that.
It is a gift of God.
It's a gift of God.
Not of works.
Oh, right.
The Sabbath is trying to lay the groundwork also for us spiritually, that we don't work for our salvation. It's a gift of God. And that's why Jesus is our rest.
Makes me think of one of my favorite verses. Matthew 11, 28 and 29. Come to me, you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls.
He gives us our rest. He gives us salvation. We don't have to work for it.
It's all free.
It's all free. And the freedom then is therefore to relax and rest, because He's our Sabbath. We don't have to do a thing. That's kind of cool, isn't it?
It is. But in the New Testament, Jesus is healing on the Sabbath. And
right.
Doesn't that go against the Old Testament?
No. And he rebutted those Pharisees by saying that you can heal, you can help, you can get your ox out of the hole. He pointed out a lot of things you do on the Sabbath, and it's a very kind, humane thing to do. And it's not about sitting idle, but about something else. And then the next thing the New Testament does is uses this concept of then where the Old Testament really looked at it, the day of rest as a time to take for God. And it moves it then that our Sabbath rest is a time of worshiping God. And it is, we are in our rest, so we are in our worship. And can you quote Romans 12:1 for me?
No,
therefore,
I can't.
Therefore, in view of God's mercy, offer yourselves as a living sacrifice, which is pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Our worship in the New Testament really is offering ourselves to Him in prayer, praise, and thanksgiving. And so, and that's an everyday thing. It's not just go to church on Sunday, one
because many
day.
Of us can't go to church.
It's an everyday, especially for us who can't go to church. It makes perfect sense. We rest in Jesus. We worship in Jesus. We have our rest in Jesus. And it can be anywhere we are. Well, there's one more section I'd like to read in chapter 25 of Leviticus, starting at verse 8, if you could please.
Mm-hmm. Count off 7 Sabbaths of years, 7 times 7 years, so that the 7 Sabbaths of years count to a period of 49 years. Then have the trumpet sounded everywhere on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement, sound the trumpet throughout your lands. Consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. Pastor Dave?
Yeah?
What does it mean, a jubilee for you?
A jubilee for you. The jubilee year is the 50th year, and at that time, everything was supposed to revert back basically to its original. Remember, each of the Israelites were in tribes, and God would break up the land for each tribe. Right. And there'd be selling and bartering and whatever with the land, but it was all supposed to go back to the original owner. And if you were an Israelite and indebted in the 50th year, the debt would be released. You'd be free. If you were a slave, you'd be free.
I bet we all wish we could have that with debt today.
Yeah, and we use that word jubilee in this way, celebration, because it was supposed to all go back to the original.
So is the jubilee still practiced today among the Jewish people? And
no.
If so, how?
To my knowledge, it's not. And the reason, I think, as your pastor Kevin pointed out, that in 525, was it? And then in around 500, the people were taken from Israel into Babylon.
This is before
BC.
Christ.
Yeah, they lost the land.
Oh.
And so that's when the Jubilee for sure quit, because this was all about the land and giving things back. And when they did come back, it wasn't exactly according to the tribes. It was more than what we have now of buying and selling. This is another significant shift of what God was trying to set up for the people. He was trying to set up the people for the land, for them, for their use, for their inheritance, for their tribes. Just as God set up, I will be your king and you will be my people. But then in Judges, we learn that the people, we want a king like everybody else. And so God, okay, and that's when we got King Saul, and then David and Solomon, and all the problem of the kings. God wanted a particular relationship with the people, and it didn't work. And it didn't work because of our sinful nature that keeps coming in with either it's wanting to be in charge and wanting to be in control like the kings, or our greed, wanting more,
mm-hmm.
until it's all gone, as it was for the people with the land.
So we're going to end it on this. Lost land, scattered people, bad kings, hopelessness.
Well, it's interesting because that's what the Old Testament does. It sets it up for Jesus. Now, remember, in the middle of our lesson, we had a wonderful gospel message. Jesus is our rest. He worked out our salvation. Jesus is our king. All the other kings were bad. Jesus is a good king with mercy and grace. Jesus also promises us heaven, the greatest land of all, so that we don't end with Leviticus, but it's laying the groundwork for Jesus and all that he does for us. And that's our hope. And that's why we're
not hopeless. That is our jubilee.
That's our jubilee. If you'd like to write us, please do. You can do so at
info.
I-N-F-O.
At not-alone.
N-O-T-A-L-O-N-E.
.net.
N-E-T. And remember.
Remember.
We are not alone.
Do come back again to room 4216.
Credits. Our sincere thanks go to Terry Nord and Robert Vaughn for their interlude music.